I was too confident. I was more interested in my music because they played the wrong music. My ring entrance was messed up because they played my wrong music. So I'm saying, I'm not going out. And Brendan went, get out there now.
You absolute diva. Just
get out there now. You ask 100 people, what do you think of that guy? Is he confident? Is he confident or is he an arrogant? 75% of people say he's arrogant, but I think that's the British public's mind. I think the British public love to, people what are doing well, love to bring them down. He just did everything good. I never expected him to like wait for me, never expected him to counterpunch me. Whenever he threw shots, he'd land. And it were in bunches. It weren't just a single shot or a single power shot. He took 4, 5, 6 shots. He probably only missed with one and land every other shot.
Hello and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tristix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oliver was child's play compared to that one?
I still get goosebumps to this day.
you couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
Beating me. He said, well, let's pull you back.
In the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
He's winning and there's nothing else.
This week, I'm joined by Ryan Rhodes as he takes us through his journey from Spice Boy to Old Spice. I grew up watching Ryan on Sky and I remember the excitement and buzz around the Ingle camp and about Ryan specifically, who was following in the footsteps of Harold Graham, Johnny Nelson and his friend Prince Nassim Hameb. He was set for huge things and after a nearly nightmare pro debut, which we discuss, he got things back on track and became the youngest man to win the Lonsdale belt while managing to do it in record time too. His career was fast-paced from the get-go, and he came up short in his first world title shot against Otis Grant. But in his 46 wins and 6 losses career, he faced the likes of Silky Jones, Del Bryan, Jason Matthews, Scott Dixon, Gary Lockett, Gary Walcombe, Jamie Moore, and of course, Saul Canelo Alvarez. Ryan's now a gym owner in Sheffield. He's still friends with Naz, Johnny, and the others. Here he recalls the peaks and troughs of a fascinating career that promised so much and delivered plenty, including being a 2-time British champion a decade apart and a European champion. This interview is also up on the Boxing Life Stories YouTube channel. If you visit, please make sure you hit subscribe. And also many thanks to those of you who've bought my book Damage. If you haven't, it's available via all good booksellers. And I also have a couple left myself that I can sign and send out if you're interested. A reminder, this podcast wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for our sponsors, Lee Blasdale, Blaz at Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hanson Lee find you the best people, Hanson Lee help you retain them. And you can find out more at hansonlee.com. If you are looking for recruitment, I can't recommend Blaz and the guys highly enough. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance, who are a leading provider of professional fire, asbestos and safety services to businesses nationwide. They offer one expert point of contact for all of your fire, health and safety compliance needs. And you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. And now here's the wonderful Ryan Rhodes.
Ryan, it's great to see you. It's been years and years and years since we had a proper chat.
It has.
I looked through some old boxing news in prep and we were speaking a lot, like 2010, 2011, 2012. And then obviously...
when I used to do a bit.
That was the end of the road. Likewise. Yeah. Not boxing, but some yeah. journalism stuff.
Yeah.
How's life today?
Great. I mean, we're just coming out of a lockdown and, you know, I hope to God this is the last one. I think me having a gym and owning a gym for the last 6 years, I think probably gyms and probably the salon industry have suffered the worst. You know, we were the first to close and probably the last to open. So it has been difficult, but here at the gym we've got some great members, some great loyal members what have stuck with us all the way through. And now it's a case of getting back to where we were before lockdown, because the gym was buzzing, absolutely buzzing before.
So how does life look to you these days? Like, what do you do?
I'm in the gym. This is my, I'm not even going to say second home. It's my first home. I'm in this place more than I am my own home. We opened the gym at 7 o'clock in the morning. We've started to close for a few hours in the afternoon. Basically, we're cleaning the gym in a couple of days a week, just so people feel safe. And then I reopen at 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 7 o'clock at night. That's Monday to Friday. On a Saturday morning, I open at 7 in the morning and we close at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And Sunday's a day of rest. Go for a nice Sunday lunch on a Sunday.
With your own boxing career, was it mission accomplished?
Yeah, definitely. I did a lot more than what I set out to do in my boxing career. You know, when I first started at Brendan's, I just used to look at Errol, at Brian Anderson, Johnny Nelson, and they were British champions at the time. Errol was European champion, but when I used to look at their Lonsdale belts round their waist when guys came in to take pictures or came to film them guys, my goal was to win a British title. And it's just in my office behind us on the wall.
You mentioned Brendan, obviously, there. I'm sure we'll talk about him plenty. But you started at his gym age six.
Yeah, 6 years old I started. My mum, I had bags of energy.
Did you live near the gym?
So no, I was about 15 minutes from the gym. I was probably about 15 minutes from the gym. So when I was 6 years old, I just had bags of energy. I was always getting, not trouble. I was just a mischievous little kid. You know, knocking on people's doors and running off, things like that. So my mum thought to channel my energy into something positive. I was never into football. I was never one of them kids what, I did play football, but it weren't something that I used to knock on my mate's house and we're going for a game of football. I weren't like that. So my mum thought boxing. I was a thick set, young 6 years old. I was chunky, big legs, big backside, big arms. And my mum thought boxing. So Harold Graham had a jewellery store in the local markets just up the road from here. So my mum took me down to see Errol one, well, took me to his shop, hoping we would bump into Errol. Obviously, my mum had seen Errol on the TV and boxing on TV. Sheffield lad. So I went down, basically she chucked me in front of him and said, what can I do with him? He's got loads of energy, he's always getting in trouble. I need to get him into something before he turns into something worse. So Errol said, bring him down to the gym one Saturday morning, told my mum where the gym were. And I remember going down to the gym, and when I walked into that gym, I still go into the gym now, even taking my lads down there sparring. And that smell, it never leaves me. I can remember as a 6 year old walking into that gym, and that fragrance just stayed with me forever. Sweat, blood, all mixed together, damp on the walls, mold in the showers, just, you know. And when I go now down to see Dominic or take the lads sparring with John and Dominic, it's just the same smell. It's just the same smell. There's not as much damp on the walls now. They've looked after that. They've tidied it up a little bit, but it's just the same place.
What were your first impressions of Brendan?
His accent. I'd never heard anybody speak the Irish accent. I was amazed. I was, you know, just how he was pronouncing his words and the letters and things like that. I'm looking at him thinking, where's that come from? Never heard that in my life. But yeah, his accent, telling people to come. When I was stood there watching kids around the circles, and he's still doing it to today, kids around the circles, doing the footwork around the circles, up and down the lines. I'm watching the ring and I'm seeing kids punch each other and I'm thinking, should they be doing that? Is that legal? Is that right? And Brendan, I remember my mum took me to a sports shop before we went down, to a local sports shop, and that sports shop, Sug Sport, ended up sponsoring the gym, ended up sponsoring us as fighters. Well, I went and got a pair of gloves from there. Probably weren't the best gloves. Lonsdale, there was. I remember the name, Lonsdale. And I got my bag, and Brendan says, "Have you got your gear on? Have you got your gear?" I says, "I've got some gloves in my bag." He went, "Put them gloves on and go on that bag there and let me see what you've got." Putting the gloves on, my mum's tying the gloves. I went on bags and I just must have put my head down and just gone crash, bang, wallop. That was my technique at 6 years old. So I'm hitting the bag and it seemed like I was punching forever. It might have been for probably a minute or two, but it seemed like I was punching forever. He went, "Right, come here." And he got this other young lad, I don't remember the young lad's name, and he says, "Right, watch him." And he went on the bag, probably around my age, maybe a bit older. And it just looked so natural to him. He was so good at what he was doing. And I'm thinking, how can he do that when I can't do that? But I remember the first day when I'd left the gym, I'm in the car and I'm looking at my gloves and I'd ripped the gloves. And I'm thinking, that's my sport, that. This is what I need to do. If I'm ripping brand new pairs of gloves on the first day, they must have been cheap gloves. But I'm thinking, yeah. So it started from there for me, down at Brendan's.
Did you take to Brendan?
Straight away.
Did he take to you?
Straight away. Yeah, I just felt comfortable in front of him. As a six-year-old or kids nowadays, when they go anywhere or do anything, they have to, I don't know, I think kids can be a little bit more intimidated or a little bit more shy. They're a little bit embarrassed, I think, more now these days than they was back then when I was that age. But I got none of that with Brendan. I was so comfortable, so confident speaking to Brendan. That's how he made you feel.
You mentioned the footwork there, obviously after you've gone hell for leather on the bag. With the footwork, is that really where everything started? You know, once you'd had that session and you went back, was it like, okay, you've come back, this is what we actually do?
Yeah, the footwork was... It was a must in the Ingle gym. It was a must. You didn't really go on the bags or jump in the ring before you learnt the footwork. Yeah, we did go on the bags. Yeah, we did spar. But it was 20 minutes, 30 minutes of lines, circles. And then Brendan would get the pads on and take us around the pads, learn us the combinations. Again, up and down the lines, round the circles. Then we'd go on the bag, practice our footwork round the bags, throwing the combinations, what we just learned on the pads with Brendan or John or John at the time. Dominic wasn't about at the time when I first joined there. He came later on. Young Brendan, John, and Brendan was the ones that padded us, instructed us, told us what to do on the lines, in your corner, sitting, flipping, backflips, whatever you could do, sing songs, build your confidence up. Even with strangers, you know, parents bringing kids in and they'd be stood around the ring and Brendan's asking you as a young kid to sing a song. I would have never done that ever if I hadn't have been in that gym. He gave us an unknown confidence, what kids never thought they had.
What song did you
sing? Thinking about, oh, Rainbow Song, Have You Heard About the Big Strong Man, nursery rhyme songs at school, but it was all to make us the people we are today. It was a plan to create
confidence,
kids what weren't confident, to give them confidence, kids what were embarrassed, to make them not embarrassed.
So were you embarrassed doing it all at the time?
At the first, yeah, because I'd never seen it before, I'd never been around anything like that before. It was strange.
So did you hesitate to do it? Did you say, I'm not going to do that?
At first, definitely. But when I saw other kids doing it at my age, I must have thought, well, if they're doing it, I can do it. And that's how it became. It became the norm.
So do you have a karaoke go-to song now?
Yeah, but I'm still terrible. I like that Mustang Sally, but I'm terrible at it.
I won't ask you to murder
no,
it, mate.
No, please don't.
So did that change you from introvert to extrovert?
I just became confident. I just became...
At what age? Because you got on there at six. By what time did you lose that sort of filter and that fear of what other people thought?
I would say 8 or 9 years old. I'd be backflipping, somersaulting. Whenever Brendan would bring important people, Brendan used to bring MPs to the gym. He used to bring solicitors, or solicitors would be in the gym. Very high profile people, police officers, guys in the army. The army used to come down to the gym. And Brendan would have the younger generation, because he would be talking to the older people, 18, 19, 20, and he'd be showing what we'd be doing as kids, and they wouldn't even do it. They would be embarrassed to do it. But we'd been doing it for years and years and years, and it was, like I say, it was just a everyday thing in that gym.
At what age did you start going around the working men's clubs?
When I was 7 years old, 8 years old. So Brendan used to have all the kids hitting the bigger lads to face, or he'd have the like 14, 15, 16, like young men hitting Johnny, Errol, Brian Anderson, Fidel, Slugger O'Toole, Clifton Mitchell to face. So he'd have like stages where, and then when I were like 18, 19, I'd have the kids hitting me to face. Then when I was at a certain age, when I turned professional, 19, 20, I'd be having the like older generation. So it worked out like you'd spar with people at the next stage, or the kids are beating you to face, and you couldn't hit them back at a certain age.
And so at the working men's clubs, Brendan would take you round, and they'd let basically civilians try and hit the boxers.
Yeah, after a few pints. Honestly, I mean, they wanted to take Johnny's head off, Harold's head off, Brian, whoever was helping out on that Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, the guys, because Brendan them offer him 20 quid. If you hit him, if you knock him out, I'll give you 20 quid. 20 quid's an afternoon session in a working men's club. Back then, back in the 80s, early 90s, 20 quids were a good drink back then.
Yeah.
So they would already have been on the sauce anyway. They would have already been halfway there anyway. So when they're getting offered £20 to try and hit Johnny or try and hit Errol to face and knock him down, if you knock him down, I'll give you 20 quid. They would jump at the chance, absolutely jump at the chance. And then when I started getting to a certain age where probably 15, 16, then he'd do that to me, and they were doing it to Naz, when Naz were always a couple of years, obviously, older than me. So then he'd do it to me and Naz.
Did you ever get hit?
The next generation. Probably, but I disguised it well. I disguised it well, and same, Naz would have done the same. But it would just, it was part of the learning of getting out of the way, not letting someone hit you. Brendan always used to say, the hardest person to fight is someone who doesn't know how to fight, because it's all right fighting someone who knows how to fight. You've got a bit of an idea on what they're going to do or what they're going to try. But if you're fighting someone who doesn't know how to fight, if he doesn't know what he's going to do, how are you going to work out what he's going to do? So they came from absolutely everywhere. It was great, great times, great learning. You know, you're having to survive. But it was great.
Were you cleaning the streets around the gym as well?
Done all that for years. Up and around Winkerbank, up and around Norman Road.
Are you out there in all weathers doing it?
All weather.
Are you thinking, why am I doing this?
You just got on with it. You didn't like doing it, but you never questioned it. You just got on with it.
So was it like an equivalent of being a football boot boy at the time, do you reckon?
Probably
it was
worse.
Like an apprenticeship.
Yeah, probably worse. I think you get about 40, you got £40.50 or something like that as a boot boy and a football team, but we didn't get paid or anything like that. Brendan said, you'll be rewarded in heaven. That's how he said, drop it on us.
And that was it was just to do the bit for the community, so
yeah,
the gym was
the
helping
area,
out.
Around the area, yeah. It was, I think I seen an interview a couple of years ago, and it was about if your own area is tidy, you know, if people in your own community sees you tidying that area, you know, make them think that if they're doing it, and they're on TV, they're on, you know, in the papers and things like that. You know, why can't we do it into our own area?
Sure.
Makes sense.
Sure. First amateur fight, how old were you?
I was 11. As soon as I'd been training, I'd been boxing since I was 6 years old.
So were you chomping at the bit then?
Couldn't wait. Could not wait. And I remember my mum and dad actually bought me a bright green and gold long dressing gown, matching shorts, bright green vest, and I boxed in Liverpool at one of the big hotels in Liverpool, my first fight. I must have took two coaches, Dan, and I was 11 years old. 11 years old. I've always had great support. My granddad, my mum, my dad, all my uncles. I've got a big family kind of thing, and I've got a lot of uncles, cousins, the lads, guys from the gym. My dad was very popular in the pubs everywhere, so all his mates used to come and support me. All my dad's friends used to come and support me. I must have took a couple of coaches down.
You win?
I won, yeah. I won.
Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Everything and more. Everything and more.
Have you still got that trophy you said about the long story? You got the first
still
one.
Still got the trophies. I've got...
Do you remember who that first one was against?
No, I cannot remember. I got asked this quite a bit ago now, and I could not remember who my first fight was against.
Did you have a lot of amateur fights?
I had 67 amateur fights. I won 4 national titles, boxed for England twice, went to Russia and boxed for England. I captained England when we went to Russia. So I had an okay amateur career.
Who was the best you fought as an amateur?
The best I'd fought as an amateur. It's a tough one. I boxed some good kids as an amateur. I was always the weight, when we get to a certain point of the championships, I was always the weight below Gary Lockett or the weight above. We never met in the amateurs. We was always meeting around the quarter finals or something like that, where Wales had obviously come down and we'd meet together. But he was always the weight. But I never boxed. I boxed a kid from Chesterfield who was an heavyweight. And he was 6'3", 6'4". And when he turned pro, he was an heavyweight. But I boxed him at 72 kilos. I forget his name as well.
Not Mark Krentz. Mark Krentz, yeah.
I boxed him in the amateurs in the... and I stopped him in the second round. You know, when I speak to people about, they always remember the amateurs.
Yeah, I had big David Price the other day, and he was reeling off
about his amateur
everything,
career.
Yeah.
I was the one who never really... I mean, obviously, I took note, but I remember James Eyre, very knowledgeable on his amateur career.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever I see James and he'll ask me questions about my amateur career, I say, oh, I can't remember. He went, you boxed such and such. And he knew more about my amateur career than I did. But as an amateur, I could not wait to turn pro. Could not wait.
And that was the whole thing, really. You sort of seemed to be in a rush. You turned pro with Frank. Why did you go with Frank? And did you speak to anyone else?
No, Frank, Naz was obviously with Frank at the time. Brendan had been talking about me to Frank for some time before I turned professional. And Frank was obviously my first choice. You know, he was the biggest, the best promoter at the time in the 90s. So it just made sense. Naz was flying the flag for the gym at the time. I'd met Frank on numerous occasions when we'd gone to support Naz. So it just made sense at the time.
So you and I obviously know this, and some of the hardcore older dudes will as well. But Boxing News said of your debut, shock of the night came in the first fight when Brendan Ingles' teenage prospect Ryan Rhodes looked out on his feet and close to a first round stoppage after getting floored twice by Welsh southpaw Lee Crocker. The report said your confidence was jolted, was it?
Too much. I was too confident. I was more interested in my music because they played the wrong music. My ring entrance was messed up because they played my wrong music. So I'm saying, I'm not going out. And Brendan went, get out of there now.
You absolute diva.
Get out there now. So I'm doing my, I had hair at the time as well. That's how long it was ago. So I'm doing my hair, making sure my hair, I'm gutting my music. So it just upset everything what I wanted it to work, I wanted it to pan out. When I got into that ring, I was still thinking, just walked out to a song I didn't even like, I didn't even didn't even care about. So the bell went, I've gone out there, I'm so relaxed, so my mind's just not on the job. It wasn't on the job. And bang, I've got it with the right hand. I've gone down, flash knocked down, I've got back up. I could hear Brendan screaming. I'm still thinking about my music, what I've just come out to. It was the wrong. I'm still wanting to have a go at whoever's playing the music. I'm thinking, what have you done to me first fight? So, because I got a friend who was a DJ, so he did all my music, he did all my tracks and everything. I just spent a couple of days before 2 hours in his bedroom trying to get the right song to walk out to. And he just messed it up. I could forget what I've come out to. So I've gone down the first round. I could hear Brendan going mad. I'm boxing. Obviously, I cannot remember anything in the first round. I've gone down again in the, towards the end of the first round. And I think the second one was quite a heavy knockdown. But I got up. I was gathered myself. Because I watched the video after, and I gathered myself. The bell more or less rung straight away. I've gone back to the corner. Honestly, Brendan gave me the biggest rollicking ever. I think he even slapped me at one point. He gave me the big, what are you doing? Look at you. Get your mind on your job. Get the mind on your job. He's embarrassing you. All your fans have come to see you. All your friends, all your family, everybody, your mum, your dad. He gave me the, but he woke me up. It woke me up. So I went out there, round two, and I stopped him. I stopped him in round two. Got rid of him in round two. But it was just the concentration.
So did you have that understanding moving forwards? Did you think, I just wasn't at the races at the start?
I wasn't at the races.
So, but it didn't dent your confidence like Boxing News 4 might have done?
Not at all. No. I'd never been down as an amateur. And I've never been dropped in training as all them years.
Wow, so, what an eye opener then. What a lesson to learn.
First fight.
Yeah.
Crazy.
After 9 fights, you fought Del Bryan. That was a big step up, wasn't it?
Yeah. Concord Leisure Centre. I boxed Del Bryan. And it was crazy because it was only a couple of fights before we was all cheering Chris Saunders. I think it was at the Mansfield Leisure Centre.
Right.
He was fighting Del Bryan for the British title. And I'd seen how tough Del Bryan was because Chris Saunders, young lad from Barnes, a good lad out of the gym. And he hit and he could punch as well, Saunders. Only a welterweight, I think they were welterweight. And he beat Del Bryan on points, but he had Del Bryan down and Saunders could punch. He was well known in the gym. For a banger. And then a couple of fights later, I'm fighting in my first six rounder. Was it a six rounder? Yeah, I think it was a six rounder. And I'm fighting Del Bryan and I'm thinking, flipping hell, bit of a step up this. I'd just seen him a few fights ago, taking Chris Saunders the distance, and Chris Saunders dropped him a couple of times in the fight. He got back up, he was game, he was up for it, very confident. And I'm fighting him in up at Concord Leisure Centre, just up road from where I lived. I only lived down the road and I could have walked there. It was so close. So I knew that was going to be a good test and a bit of a step up for me. And it was. My hands were killing after that fight because I ate Del Bryan with absolutely everything that night.
Did you think you were ready for a British title after that?
I was confident. I was very, very confident. I thought I could beat Kim Kong. I really did.
So it came in your 10th fight. It was against Silky Jones. Boxing News predicted he'd win.
Yeah, did that.
Through Daniel Herbert. You were just 20. What are your memories of that night of beating Silky? Because you knew him from the Ingle Gym as well, didn't you?
We used to train, obviously, down at the gym. Silky was about, 10 years older than me, I think he was. So when Silky was pro at the gym, I was like an amateur at the gym. But I remember, we're talking about this a couple of days ago, because some friends of Silke trains in my gym, who's been friends with Paul for many, many years. I remember, I think I was about 12 or 13 years old. I go back to the story of what Brendan used to do with us. He used to have the younger kids hitting the pros to face. Now, at 12, 13, I was very strong. I was very mature, big arms. I was fit. He used to have us hitting the pros to the face. And I remember hitting Silke with a couple of big shots. And he dropped me as a kid. I was only 12, 13. And he put me down, put me on my backside. And I remember that. I thought, he's got face on because I got the best of him in that. He weren't expecting me to. But I always remembered it. And when that fight got offered, I always remembered. He put me down as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old. I don't know whether he put me down or shoved me to the floor because I was getting on top of him. Like I said, I was big, I was strong, I was very mature for my age. I was always sparring the pros. So I don't know whether he pushed me down or he hit me, and I thought, all right. And then when that fight, I remembered that incident in the gym. So, but he'd left the gym like years. He'd been at Glynn's, he'd been in London, because he'd obviously signed with Matchroom. And the fight before my fight with Silke, he was world champion. He won the world title at Hillsborough Leisure Centre. But he got stripped of the title because he didn't go to America to defend the world title. The WBO stripped him because he said he wasn't getting paid enough or wasn't getting the money he was entitled to. So they took the title off him and then they made us for the British title.
What are your memories of fighting Silke?
Tough, technical, very technical. But Brendan always got into my head when that fight was made. He said, listen, the gym's evolved, the gym's so much better gym now. All the fighters are so much better now when Silke left, so you're a better fighter. Silke remembers what we used to do when he was there. The gym's a different gym now, the gym's a better gym. Techniques are different, the pad work's different. It's better gym, so you're a better fighter than when he was down here. But in that fight, I always felt I was one step ahead of him. It was technically good, technically tough fight, bit of tigge. I'd catch him, I'd be waiting for counter him, he'd be waiting to counter me, but I was always that one step ahead.
After the fight, he said you were going to be a world champion.
Yeah.
And Ensley Bingham was actually being mentioned as a possible opponent. Was that ever close?
I think it got talked about. Ensley Bingham commentated on a few of my fights with Sky. And it did get talked about, but it just never materialised. Quite a few fights got spoke about, but they never materialised.
Where did the Spice Boy thing come from? Was that reference to the Spice Girls at the time?
Yeah, at the time, it was. The Spice Girls was very, very big at the time. And I remember me and Naz once went to London and we was at an event and the Spice Girls was there. And we had some pictures and everything and this. And when we came back up and John Ingle found out we'd been down to this party and we was with the Spice Girls, it was John Ingle what did it, Spice Boy. He says, keep that name. He says, it'll
stick.
It'll stick, yeah. And it did. Well, now it's Old Spice.
So there was this reputation, obviously, that came with it. Boxing News actually said at this point that in a feature, you denied suggestions that groups of young female fans congregate around your house.
Yeah, no, it didn't happen.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. No,
that's brilliant.
No, definitely not.
That sounds like it's the only time that's ever been written in boxing news.
Something like that. I think something was in the Sheffield Star, in the local Star as well.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I think people just talking.
But the story was, the main story was that you were in a hurry and you won the Lonsdale belt outright in 90 days with wins over Paul Wardby, 118 seconds, I think. And then you beat
First round, yeah.
And then you beat Del Bryan again.
In the rematch.
And That was it, record setting.
Yeah, I mean, so we got offered the fight against Peter Wardbe, who's a good lad. I still see him at the shows now and again. And he always, whenever there's a post or anything about that fight, he'll put up, it was a lucky shot, I walked onto it. But yeah, he's a good lad. And then I'd booked a holiday straight after the Peter Wardbe fight. A couple of the lads was going to Tenerife. So I'd booked a holiday. And then it must have been Frank at the time. Frank said to Brendan, listen, there's an opportunity to make a bit of history here. We're doing a show, I think it was in Reading. Cornelius Carr was fighting, I forget who Cornelius Carr was fighting. And they said, we'll do a double top of the bill. We can do Ryan and Del Bryan. And if Ryan wins that, he breaks the record of winning the Lonsdale belt outright. The record was 95 days, Michael Ayres, and I could have done it, and I did it in 90 days. So Brendan sat me down and said, look, I said, I paid for my holiday, Brendan. He says, forget about your holiday, this is more important. So I ended up agreeing to it, losing my holiday money, whatever I'd paid. And yeah, we did the fight, and I boxed. It was a rematch with Del Bryan. I knew it was going to be a tough fight again. But I stopped him, I think, round 7 or 8.
Where were you going to go on holiday?
Tenerife.
Okay.
Tenerife. Yeah, with a few of the lads.
Not a bad decision, though, in the end.
No. And to be fair, I don't think it'll get broke now, anytime soon, because now you've got to win it and defend it 3 times.
Someone's going to have to really go out of their way to do it.
Who's going to have 4 fights in 90 days?
Yeah.
So it's a tough one now. So it was worth losing the holiday money.
That Lonsdale belt, obviously, you said about it at the start, it's just over there, but it meant a lot to you at the time,
didn't
it?
Massive, because it was what I wanted. It was my ambition. I probably never even thought about winning it out or keeping it. I never knew about it probably when I was 6, 7 years old, and I used to see Errol having pictures in the gym and Johnny having pictures. I never thought about, but as I got older and as I knew about more about the Lonsdale belt, the recognition and what it was worth, and it was definitely my ambition to keep it for myself.
At what point did Brendan say to you, and what point did you start to believe, and was it the same time that, hang on, you know, yeah, the Lonsdale belt's great and everything, but, you know, you could go to the world title level?
Well, before I boxed for the British title, before I boxed for, you know, there was a lot of hype around the gym with Naz, with Johnny, when Errol was at the gym, and there was a lot of hype, and I was involved in that hype, so my name was touted around as though I was the next. Well, I'm going to be the next world champion in the gym, and I really truly believed it. I really truly believed it, and it's that confidence of going back all them years ago of singing in front of people and embarrassing myself in front of people, but we're not feeling embarrassed. Do you know what I mean? Because I got the confidence, I got the ability, well, I thought I got the ability and the, not cockiness, but I was just, I don't know what I'm trying to say, I was just a very confident kid.
You had that
and
belief.
And some people take confidence for cockiness. It's not, when you're confident about your ability, or when you think you're good enough to reach them goals, that's what I was.
But you guys all had this sort of air of arrogance, though, didn't you?
Yeah. But was it arrogance or was it confidence?
It was perceived. So when you've got people like a Cole Thompson, for instance, who's a hard working, you know, sort of working man's blue collar hero.
I get that,
And you've got guys that are sort of flashy, Spice Boy and all the rest of it. Then it's where the sport creates good and bad and, you know, heroes, villains and all the rest of it. In many ways, you guys were playing the villains a lot of the time.
It's the perception, I think, of people's individual thoughts.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, you ask 100 people, what do you think of that guy? Is he confident? Is he confident or is he an arrogant? 75% of people say he's arrogant. But I think that's the British public's mind. I think the British public love to, people what are doing well, love to bring them down. Chris Eubanks was very confident in his ability. Extraordinary, but people would say, cocky, I hate him. I remember going to watch Chris Eubanks when I was 12, 13 years old. And Chris Eubanks did it with Naz. You just was amazed with what he was doing. A lot of it was show, a lot of it was confidence, a lot of it was for TV purposes. But for someone involved in the game, so seeing someone do something like that, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
By the way, talking about the Lonsdale belt, it said one of the interviews I saw of you at the time said that your mum was keeping it in the bank.
Yeah, I took that away. I took it back. I did. So my mum saved it for a good few years. My mum saved it. She never took it to the bank though. She saved it for a good few years, and then when it was my 40th birthday, my wife had it, because it was just gathering dust upstairs with the other belts and everything, and she says, so she had it framed of a company I use in Barnsley, and she get it on my 40th. It's in a lovely black case, glass case, with a picture when I beat Silke, and on the other side, 11 years on, when I beat
Gary Wilcombe.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are great days in the gym, by the way, when you say, you know, talking about this British title time, and obviously Johnny, Naz and that. Who were your best friends in the gym, or were you just all
so
close?
So me and Naz were best mates. We did everything together. We went everywhere together.
Where were you living? Did you have your own place?
So when I won the British title, I bought a house. I'm in the same house now. So it was a brand new build, a 4-bedroom detached house. I'm in the same house now. So where the gym is, there's one road called the Woollywood Bottom. I don't know if you've seen the guys running along that road. I live right at the end of Woollywood Bottom in a place called Ecclesfield. So which is from Brendan's gym in my car. It's a 5-minute journey.
Right.
So I'm in that same house now. That's where.
So and where was Naz living?
Naz did live at the shop, and then when Naz obviously, you know, earned the money and got the money he was fighting for, Naz then moved at the other side of Sheffield, a place called Ecclesall Road South, bought a beautiful house, bought it from the ex-Sheffield Wednesday football manager, Trevor Francis.
So
gorgeous house.
How close were you and Naz?
Best mates.
What did you do everything together?
Everything. When we used to finish training, we used to go to a country club called the Pine Grove at Stannington every single night. Before Naz passed his test and drove, my mum used to pick us up from the gym, she'd take him up road, he'd get changed quick, and she'd drop us straight off at the Pine Grove. And nine times out of ten, my mum would come and collect us, take us back, drop Naz off, and then I'd go home. Or someone at the Pine Grove would drop us off home.
So what were you doing at the Pine Grove?
Playing snooker. Okay. It was a country club, a snooker club. It had a gym in there. It had a steam room, a sauna. So we'd go up there, jump in the steam room, have a sauna, and then we'd come outside and play pool, play snooker or pool.
Naz at that time came across as arrogant, was he? Or was he
confident? Confident. Were you? Again, people have got that perception of, It was confident.
But it's a winning mentality. Was he a nice guy to hang around with? Did you really enjoy it?
Best mates. Like I said, from up until when Naz left Sheffield and moved to London, that's when we like basically
went separate ways.
Yeah, went separate ways. You know, he got his own life in London with Alicia and the kids. And I got my wife Danielle with my two girls, Ellie and Lisa. So we just went apart. Whenever he's in Sheffield, though, we'll meet or we'll go for a game of pool or snooker, and or go for a bite to eat somewhere.
Have you ever had a fallout? Big fallout? No.
No.
You've always been.
We
tight.
Just when Naz left Brendan, we both did different things. Never had a fallout with him. Never had words with him. But he went and did his thing, and I carried on doing my thing.
Back then, British title, you were talking of winning world titles at three weights, 154, 160 and 168. Do you remember that? Do you remember that ambition? Was that realistic? Do you think that was realistic now with hindsight, obviously going all the way up to 168?
Probably not going up to 168, but I was sparring middleweight. I was sparring super middleweights. At 18, 19 years old, I'm going up to Leeds sparring Henry Wharton when Henry Wharton was fighting... Who was Henry Wharton? Before he fought Nigel Benn. I'm going up to Leeds sparring Henry Wharton. I'm going to Germany sparring Sven Otker, Marcus Beyer.
Have you got some good German sparring stories? Johnny's obviously filled with them.
Me and Johnny used to go together because he used to spar the May brothers, Rudy May and Torsten
May.
And I used to spar, he's not with us no more, I used to spar Marcus Beyer.
Yep.
And Sven Otker when they was fighting. So we used to go to Germany together, me and Johnny, sparring. So we had some great times over there, 2 or 3 weeks at a time, sparring. Basically, you go and you train in the morning, we go for a run in the morning, come back to the hotel, eat, wait for the driver to come and pick us up, then we'd be at the gym sparring, back to the hotel, watching MTV music. That was it, that was our life.
Were you treated well over there?
Yeah, very well. They looked after us. Yeah, they looked after us. It were great times and tough sparring.
I was going to say, what an education.
Massive. Because this was before I was even British champion. This was, I'm out in Germany sparring world champions.
You won three more, then you fought Otis Grant for the world title. It was close, but he won a decision.
Yeah.
Was it too early for that fight?
Just experience lost me that fight.
So was it too early?
Probably too early, yeah. It was one fight where I thought, I'm not going to knock this kid out. I'll beat him, but I'll not knock him out. I thought every other fight, because I watched the fights, I watched his last fight before me. I think he boxed Lonnie Bradley. And it was just a fight where I thought, I'm going 12 rounds here. So I've got to pace myself early on in the fight, take my time, and then turn it on in the second half of the fight. But I'd saved too much. I'd not done enough too much earlier. And then when it got to round 9, 10, 11 and 12, I got bags of energy. I was chucking him everywhere. I was on top of him all the time. I think I lost by 2 points or something like that in that fight. But I just, if I'd have gone for it earlier on in the fight and not trying, you know, held back a little bit and try and save the energy, I should have gone for it. But it was down to experience that fight.
Boxing News had predicted that you'd win. And by the way, you mentioned Lonnie Bradley. You nearly fought Lonnie when he was the champion.
He was the champion.
And that was going to be on that full Monty bill, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he...
Detached retina.
If I'm right. So it was going to be on the full Monty bill with Naz and Calzaghe. Calzaghe was fighting Steve Collins at the time, but that ended up falling through. I boxed a guy who had just beat Gary Jacobs in, I can't remember his name, but what a show that was, completely sold out.
That was peak Sky, wasn't it? Because was that when, they probably had a big American show afterwards, if I remember rightly, but they used to have those double ones.
Playing as well I don't know if it was World Cup or the Europeans. England, so they put the England game on the TVs in the arena, so it was great. I forgot his name now. Did I knock him out in round 2 or 3? Something like that, I think it was.
How hard was it to take the Grant defeat? Because you created a lot of momentum. Like you said, there was a buzz around the gym. It was almost like you were a world champion and waiting, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, because I did so well, because I finished the fight better than what he did, I realised that it was only down to experience that I lost that fight. I realised that, you know, if I'd have had a few more fights, maybe a little bit more experience, and I'd have won the fight. So, and I came out of that fight with credit because I finished the last three rounds on top.
Was Brendan happy?
Well, after that fight, Brendan flew straight to America because Naz was fighting the week after against Kevin Keller. So basically, as soon as that fight was done, Brendan was off and I flew out on the Monday. I think I boxed on the Saturday, I flew out on the Monday. to the fight. And Brendan was happy. He sensed happy. He didn't seem disappointed. I think obviously it was obviously me, and then it was switched straight to Naz, so he didn't have time to really think about things. But yeah.
At the time, Brendan said that Otis had old manned you.
Old manned me out of the fight, yeah.
And you said, I thought it could have gone either way. They said he was finishing the round stronger, but I thought I was doing better towards the end of the rounds.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Dominic, at the time, who's obviously now on the scene, said it wasn't the end of the world. What's your relationship been like with Dom over the years?
Great. Never had... When I left the Ingles and joined Dave Caldwell, it was a case of... I sat down with John and Dominic. I said, I'm bored. I need something to give me that lease of life again. And I was 22 years down with the Ingles. I was 22 years down training with Brendan, John and Dominic. And I needed a change. It was same training time, same conversations, same people in the gym. And I just got to a stage where I wasn't enjoying the game. So I said to John and Dominic, obviously, and Brendan, I said, I need a change. I need something to give me the motivation again, to give that lease of life again. Because if not, I'm going to get beat. I'm going to get beat and I'm just going to walk away. So I needed something else. And when I left the Ingles, joined Dave, I felt like I got that buzz back again.
After that ground fight, by the way, you said, I'm only 21, I'll be back.
Yeah.
Which is where I mentioned you've now got a 21-year-old daughter, just to say that how old you feel.
Yeah.
We'd seen the flips and the somersaults, by the way. You mentioned there about the gymnastics. How do you practice your gymnastics? Just trial and error?
Just trial and error in the gym. The canvas was a nice, thick...
Did you ever mess up? Badly?
Not in the gym. I don't think I did in the gym.
What about on fight night?
No, never on fight night, no. No.
Why didn't Naz flip against Barrera?
I don't think the gloves worked out to get his thumb over the top rope.
When he didn't flip, did you think something's not right here? Or did you know
it
by
wasn't,
then things
it,
weren't
it,
right?
He'd done it maybe one or two fights previous as well. I know he didn't do it in Barrera, but I think he did it in one or two other fights as well. But you've got to be confident to do something like
sure.
that.
He
was confident anyway. Let's not get that wrong. But I think you've got to be confident to flip in front of thousands and thousands of people. And if your gloves aren't right over that top rope, I mean, Naz messed up once or twice. Messed up when he sprung over. But yeah, you've got to be 100%. You can't be second guessing that. No way.
Who was the best gymnast?
Me.
In the gym?
I taught Naz to flip over the top rope. Naz couldn't do a backflip. I was doing the front flips, and then I was doing the back. Who else was good at flipping? He's not with us no more. Thomas Bradley. Thomas Bradley could flip. He was good at doing backflips.
Love it. By the way, you had 8 months off after Otis Grant. Did you need the break because you've been so active?
No, maybe because I've been so active. I was a very active fighter back then. You know, I was only... It was my... So I turned pro 18, 19... So 2 years and it was my 11th fight. So I think I'd been pretty active.
At a decent level. It was a British size.
At a decent
size,
level as well, yeah.
And
at a decent level
lunch.
As well, so... I was always in the gym at the time. We was always training at the time anyway. So probably just needed a bit of, just to recharge the batteries.
You won 3 on the bounce after that. And when you returned, you suffered a huge shock defeat to Jason Matthews.
Yeah.
Where did that go wrong?
So the Sunday before, I was fighting the Saturday. So fights, what's that, 6 days before, I'd gone to do a photo shoot up at a castle just outside of Sheffield with the St. George's Cross on. I got the outfit on, all the metal plates with the swords and everything. So we'd done the photo shoot, and in the car driving back to the gym, I was with Brendan, and Brendan said, I need to tell you something. I says, what? He said, the kid who you're fighting, which was Bert Schenk, pulled out. I went, you're joking. So Bert Schenk, if you know Bert Schenk's style, just a boxer, typical Eastern European, German fighter, upright and away, move side to side. So I said, you're joking. He says, but they've got you an opponent straight away, don't worry about it. Jason Matthews. Now, I just beat a kid what had stopped Jason Matthews. So we'd gone from Bert Schenk, who was just a boxer, you know, technically good fighter, to Jason Matthews, who was one of the biggest middleweight, biggest punching kids out there at the time. My mentality was, no problem, I'll beat him. I've just stopped a kid who's just stopped him. Fought the complete wrong fight. All I thought was mentality, probably a little bit inexperienced mentally, not boxing wise, but just too confident. I went into that fight thinking, I'll just need to land one and I'll knock him out. He's just been beat by a kid who I've just beat.
By the way, you talk about Matthews being big there. We didn't mention about the weight for Otis Grant.
As in me moving up from light middleweight to middleweight?
Yeah.
So I always thought I was a big light middleweight anyway. So my first fight as a pro, I think I was 11 stone 10, 11 stone 8 or something like that. So I started my professional career as a middleweight anyway. Then when I boxed, I think it was Del Bryan, I came down to 11-2, 11-3. Then I got made mandatory for the British title against Silke, 11 stone. So then I had, what did I have, 5 or 6 fights at light middleweight. And I was always thick set, big, strong. And then the opportunity came to fight Otis Grant at middleweight.
Yeah.
Confident, again, very confident in my ability, move up a weight. Obviously, I struggled to make light middleweight. It was tough to make light middleweight. So give me a few extra pounds to play with.
And then apologise for jumping around here, but going back to Jason Matthews, just reading the report the other day, Jason's mother recently died, and he was
the week before, that week or something.
Yeah, so he'd been motivated to fresh levels.
Yeah.
Was that loss harder to take than the Grant defeat?
Yeah, because I got knocked out. I didn't get knocked out. I was trying to get up, but I was gone. That hurt me. That did hurt me.
Boxing News said you must agree with this, I guess. The type of shattering defeat from which boxers rarely fully recover.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure about that. You never fully recover.
Fully recover. But I don't know about fully career, I think it depends on the individual.
But it knocked you sideways.
It knocked me for a couple of years as well. Because then, the fight after that, I'm in the same venue fighting in just a 6-rounder. In the same venue that I'd just been knocked out in. However, how many months after.
Did you think about jacking it in?
No. I knew I could do something in the game. I knew I'd got the ability to achieve in the game.
I think Claude Abrams wrote for Boxing News at the time. He said after the Jason Matthews fight, I think he said he saw you signing autographs for fans afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think he said, you know, what's going to happen now? And you said it's only a minor setback.
Yeah.
But you were quite crushed.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to tell how I'm feeling inside. That's obviously, I'll take that home and I'll speak to my wife. Speak to my family and tell them how upset. But at the time, I've got to make people think that it's a setback. I'm going to get back on the bike and ride again.
Inwardly, did you think, I'm not world class? This isn't it now.
Never thought that.
No.
Never thought I wasn't world class, because what I was doing, where I was going, sparring with world champions, sparring with world title contenders. I'd just got sacked. I think it was probably about a couple of years after that. I'd gone to Spain and sparred the guy who was WBC champion who boxed Oscar De La Hoya.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean.
Who got robbed against Oscar De La Hoya. He should have got the decision.
You're not talking Sturm, are you?
No, not Sturm. I forget his name now. He boxed Oscar De La Hoya, and he should have got the decision over Oscar De La Hoya. And I got sacked after 2 days of sparring. I took my wife and my daughter to Madrid to spar. We'd gone for 10 days. They'd paid for us to go for 10 days. My daughter, she was probably not a year old. I think she was about 6-8 months old. So we'd gone for a little bit of a vacation as well. I'd been there 2 days. I'd gone and done a training session one day. Did some pads with one of the coaches. Perfect. Went in the next day, sparred. Honestly, when I say I played with him, he couldn't hit me. It was one of the easiest spars I'd sparred. Went back to the hotel. That next morning, the phone went in the hotel room, and it was one of the translators from one of the teams. Said, Ryan, he said, they looked at you last night and it's not what they want. It's not what they want because I played with him. It was easier. And Brendan always taught us, whenever you go away sparring, just do enough. Get your money what you're entitled to. Just do enough. Don't do too much. Don't show them too much. You never know whether you might fight these guys again. Or get your money. You're going to get paid well. I was getting £100 a day. £100 a day, even when I wasn't sparring, because I was there, I was getting £100 a day. They sacked me after 2 days. They give me a week's money up front.
You had 7 fights from 1999 to 2001. They were all at a much lower level. Had you lost faith in you, or had Frank lost faith in you, or was it just a question of rebuilding some confidence?
I think maybe a bit of both. I'd lost. Yeah, I think Frank had lost a bit of confidence in me. A couple of fights was arranged and fell through by the wayside, but that was just part and parcel of boxing anyway. So, probably a bit of both. I was building a bit of confidence up, and maybe Frank had lost a bit of confidence in me at the time.
What about Brendan? Had he lost?
Never. No. Never. Never. I never felt it anyway. I never felt that Brendan lost confidence in me at all.
Did you feel like you needed to rebuild? Did you want to get your legs back under you?
I had to rebuild. You know, it's the fight game is like snakes and ladders. The ladders, you know, are very short in the boxing game to get to where you want to be. But when you get beat, the snakes are very long. You have to come. Like I said, I boxed. I was top of the bill fighting Jason Matthews at the top of my game. I got beat in the second round. My fight after, I'm fighting in the sixth round on the undercard of in the same venue. Who was fighting for the world title? Like, it was the commentator for who's just gone for Sky. I forget his name.
What weight?
Is he a lightweight, super featherweight? He was with Frank commentating for Frank, and now he's on Sky, and now he's with Sky. From Wales.
Oh, Barry Jones.
Barry Jones. Sure. Barry Jones was fighting and dropped in the...
Aslino Freitas. Sure.
Yeah, in the first round, I think it was. So I'm fighting the fight top of the bill, and then I'm in a sixth rounder, way down the card. That's just how it is.
You joined Mick Hennessy, didn't you?
Yeah. I had a couple of fights on Mick Hennessy shows, yeah.
And Lee Blundell came on that, didn't
yes.
he?
Yes. That was Panos as promotions. That was okay. on that card, yeah.
What happened with that fight with Lee? Because another one where, you know, people would have thought, well, you know, it beat Lee Blundell and you're back in the picture.
Yeah, so the build-up to that fight, myself and Frank was not on speaking terms. There was letters going backwards and forwards, solicitors' letters going backwards and forwards, and the weighing, the morning of the weighing, I've woke up at home, me and Dominic are driving down to London to weigh in for that fight. The postman comes, puts a letter through the front door, my name, open it up, solicitor's letter from Frank Warren. If you fight on this, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. And my head was just fried. It was just fried with it all. No excuses. If I'm honest, I didn't even think the fight was going to happen. I thought, even walking through York Hall, Bethnal Green, getting into that, walking through them doors, and big doors at the front, I honestly thought that fight wasn't going to happen. I thought Frank would have somehow stopped that fight from happening. That's what I thought. So my mind wasn't on the job in that fight.
How big a setback was that?
Massive. That was a setback. I mean, I dropped him, I put him down in the first round, and the build up to that, so the sparring was that, I sparred Buster Keaton. I was only a middleweight, Keaton, big, thick cruiserweight. Tristan, obviously, you know how big Keaton is. In sparring a couple of weeks before, and Keaton chucked him from there, used to chuck him from absolutely everywhere. And he chucked this uppercut, and I'm looking at, I remember looking like he were in slow, and I pulled back, and he missed my chin, but caught my nose, and it split. I mean, it's still not right now. He split my nose and split all the septum, and it would not stop bleeding for a couple of days. Went to the hospital. I said, does it need cauterizing or anything like that? She said, there's nothing we can do. The nurse said, there's nothing we can do. So my nose was bleeding solid for a full 2 or 3 days. So I didn't spar again after that. The first round, my nose went straight away in the Blundell fight. Nose went straight away. I dropped him, I think, in the first or the second round. There was a few combinations thrown. He caught me with a few shots. But my mind wasn't there. I was just elsewhere. Like I said, walking into that venue, I didn't even think I was going to fight.
Three fights later, you beat Scott Dixon, who was a tough guy. How much confidence did that win give you, and being able to go hard rounds with someone like Scott?
Yeah, because I'd seen Scott for many, many years, and I knew how tough he was. I knew he'd give everything. He left it all in the ring, so I knew that was going to be a tough fight. Nottingham Arena, that were on McKennessy's show. That was a good show. Carl Froch, I think, were top of bill on that fight.
Is that the Charles Adamu fight?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. I knew that were a big confidence boost, because I knew I'd beat a tough kid there. I beat a tough lad in Scott Dixon.
And a couple of fights later, you were back with Frank.
Yeah, so that's when I joined Dave. So that's when I joined Dave Caldwell. And Dave was working with Frank at the time. Dave had got a couple of lads signed with Frank. He got a couple of lads what fought on Frank's shows. So when I left the Ingles, joined Dave, sat down with Dave, spoke about what do we do promotion-wise. He turned around and organised the meeting, went to London, sat down with Frank and I think Andy was at the and Dean Powell at the time. Sat down, told them what I wanted to do, told them my goals and where I wanted to go, did the deal, and I was back getting promoted by Frank.
What were the goals?
Wanted to be world champion. I'd still never lost that faith. Yeah, I'd had the setbacks, yes, I'd had the defeats, but I still believed I could achieve in this game and achieve at the top level. A world title was my ambition. All the way through my career, a world title was my ambition.
You scored 4 wins in 2005 and 1 in 2006 before you faced Gary Lockett.
Yeah.
You mentioned you guys seemed to be on some sort of collision course where you somehow missed each other as amateurs, but did you know him? Had you sparred with him?
Never sparred with him. I knew him. We'd been on the England course together. Like I said, we would always meet in the quarterfinals or the semifinals in the championship. So I'd known him for many, many years.
You were just in different brackets in the
just
draws?
Just different brackets, yeah. Just weight below or weight above each other. I knew Gary for many, many years. Obviously, he was a top-class amateur. and a great professional fighter. So
what are your memories of the fight with Gary?
Great fight. So the fight, so we should have fought before, but the week of the fight, I've always, from being 24, 25 years old, I've always suffered with back problems. I got bulging discs and everything like that. So every now and again, it'd flare up in a sparring session or a strength and conditioning session. So my last spar, when we should have fought, my back went, so I pulled out, I had to pull out of the fight. I was at the Institute of Sport. I was trying to see the physios down there, the best physios possible, and it wasn't right, so I had to pull out of that fight. Then they rescheduled the fight, and it was Millennium Stadium. Joe Calzaghe should have fought, I believe, on that card, but he pulled out of the fight. So it ended up being Danny Williams for Audley Harrison, I think it was, on that card. Okay. I'm sure it was. So training camp again went brilliant. Again, my last spar, my back went again in that last spar, and Dave said to me, you pull out of this fight, you'll never get your chance again. So for 10 days before the Gary Lockett fight, I was in the hydropool in the Institute of Sport, lifting weights on a treadmill, just running in the water, lifting weights, seeing physios twice, three times a day. A guy called Derek, who was one of the top physios down at the EIS. So I wasn't confident going into that fight because I thought, I've not been able to train for 10 days properly. I've just been training in the hydrotherapy pool, lifting weights, which is not good at anyway. So, but I'd done everything. I'd made the weight easier. I'd done everything possible. My back went, nothing I could do. Got on with the fight. Fight was great, technical. Gary, good big puncher. He hit me on the top of the head, I think round 4 or 5, and just a flash knockdown. Got up, tell Dave I was absolutely fine. And I hit him. I remember round 10, Ren, we went out for round 10, and I hit him with this, I think I was orthodox, and I hit him with an overhand right. He missed me, I hit him, and I dropped him heavy. And he got up, and I did everything I can to finish him, but he managed to survive that round. And I really did leave everything in that round. Round 11, I'd blown myself out a little bit. Round 12, I went for him again. And it were a close fight. But Gary got it by a couple of rounds, two or three rounds, I think it was.
You came back with 3 stoppage wins from that, and then you were looking to become the oldest British champion.
Yeah.
When you fought Gary Walcombe in 2008. It was 12 years after you fought Silky.
Yeah, wow.
And you stopped Gary in 9.
9, yeah.
How high does that factor onto your list of achievements, winning the world title at that sort of more advanced age, having come through everything that you've come through?
I think it was quite high up there because I've been written off for so many years. It was the Gary Lockett fight. I went back, we went at the press conference after, went back to the hotel, and I went and got a shower in the hotel room. A couple of my friends that wanted to come to support, well, not a couple, there was loads, we took loads, a couple of coachfuls again. And I went and had a shower, and I looked at myself in the mirror and I thought, I look skinny, me. And I jumped on the scales, you know what I weighed? 11 stone 1, and I boxed him at middleweight. I weighed the day before, on the limit, 11 stone 5, so many ounces, whatever it were. Ate everything, drunk everything, felt good, felt great. And I jumped on the scales and I was 11 stone 1. And I phoned Dave and I phoned my strength and conditioner, Mark Willie, at the time. I says, come and look at this. So they come to my dressing rooms, I jumped on the scales, 11 stone 1. I said, that's it, I'm doing like middleweight. I says, I'm not doing middleweight again. They're too big, they're too strong. They're coming down from a lot bigger weight than what I was. So from that fight on, we decided to do light middleweight again. And then I had a couple of fights on Dave's shows. And then I got a mandatory position, number one to fight Gary Wilcombe for the British title.
And also around about this time, a little bit later, there was a link up with Haymaker.
Yeah.
And that was obviously through Dave, and you ended up fighting Vincent Voomer on the Monty Barrett, David Hay bill
that
and stuff.
That was a good card.
Good times?
Great times, great times. There were big things at the time with Haymaker,
Satanta.
Yeah. It didn't last too long, but I was the first, Hillsborough Leisure Centre, I was the first big show, what Haymaker did, defending my British title. Against Jamie Coyle, Scottish, tough Scottish lad, defending my British title at Hillsborough Leisure Centre, live on Satanta. And then I went on and boxed for the WBC international title against Vincent Voomer, who I knew were going to be a tough fight again. I'd just seen him box in Manchester. He beat that Manchester lad, I can't remember, his name's escapes me.
Not Matthew Hall, was it?
No, it weren't Matthew Hall, no. No, I think it's on tip of my tongue, I'll think about it. Yeah, so I knew that was going to be a tough fight. Big show, David Hay's first heavyweight fight against Monty Barrett. And we did well because that fight was not only for the WBC International, it put me in the top 10 rankings in the WBC rankings, so it was a great, great, great fight.
A couple of fights later, you fought Jamie Moore in a Fight of the Year winner. I think Fight of the Year winner, wasn't it?
Fight of the Year, yeah.
Which was a belter. How hard was that fight?
Tough fight. You know, Jamie had been winning, been beating everybody, been doing so well. It's such a shame Jamie never got a world title shot. He more than deserved a world title shot. You know, me and Jamie's been friends for like many, many years. I've seen him fight many, many times. And then when that fight got made, I was so confident in it.
Were you guys messaging back and forward?
To be fair, no. It weren't about that. We did a few press conferences and we had some laughs and everything like that. And then the week of that fight, I went up to stay at Bolton. I was training at Amir Khan's gym. I did my last three sessions in his gym. And then we did a press conference the day before. Yeah, the press conference day before the weigh-in. And then when we went to the weigh-in, he dropped so much weight. I knew he dropped a lot of weight. I mean, there's stories that he did drop a hell of a lot of weight, like scary amounts of weight.
What was the difference maker during the fight?
So in that fight, I knew I had to stand and fight Jamie. At some point, I would have rather it been later rather than it being so early on in the fight. But I knew I had to stand and fight with Jamie because I couldn't have moved like that for the full 12 rounds. So me and Dave and Mark Willing, my conditioner, we planned on, you know, moving and getting out of the way, making him miss, counter him and make him pay when he'd miss. And then probably around halfway, six, seven rounds, I'm probably going to be have to stand and have a fight with Jamie and have it out with him. Not my style, but it was probably what I wanted to do. That first round, he was on me like a rash. I could not get him off me. He was there in front of me, cutting the ring down so well. I went back to the corner and I remember saying to Dave, he'd scratched my eye. He'd hit me with a shot and my eye had scratched, and I knew it had scratched because it had happened in training before. And it was just watering, and I'm trying to wipe it, Dean Powell was in my corner saying, don't wipe your eye, but he didn't understand that he'd scratched the orbital of my eye. And I went back to the corner and I said, Dave, I've got to stand now. I can't keep getting out of the way. I'm getting tired too quick. He says, well, if you think you can do it, you do it. And I remember round two, I had to stand. I remember Jim Watts saying, I don't get why his style's this, why he's fighting Jamie. Jamie's kind of fight. But it was the tactics, but it weren't the tactics so early on. So I stood and fought him. I fought him at his own game. He hit me with some great body shots. he hit me with some great shots, but I just felt that it wasn't hurting me. I was catching a lot on the gloves, and I felt probably around three, him going back to the corner, worse than what I was going back to my corner. So from round three, my confidence was going up and up and up.
And his tank was going
lower. And his was going lower and lower and lower. And I think round four, probably around 30 seconds, I only watched the fight again a few weeks ago, the end of round four, I hit him with a few counter shots, and it was good shots, and the commentary really like bigged me up. They really said, oh, Ryan's finished that round strong. And I went back to the corner, and I remember saying to Dave again, I remember it like it was yesterday, I've got him now, I've got him, I knew I had him. And then from round five onwards, it was my fight.
A couple of fights later, you boxed a fella called Canelo in Mexico. Oh, yeah. What was Mexico like, and how were you treated over there?
Brilliant, amazing.
You spent about 3 weeks there.
I was out there 3 weeks, yeah. Obviously, to acclimatise and to get used to the altitude, we was 5,500 feet above sea level.
Was that a career high payday?
Oh yeah, definitely. But yeah, it was great.
And you'd had 49 fights, so it was your first one abroad.
It was, as a professional. I boxed as an amateur, bro. But yeah, as a professional, yeah. Been abroad many, many times to fights and things like that.
Naz Kelly at the Garden.
Naz Kelly, yeah. Been to watch Johnny fight, you know, around the world. But it was my fight against for the WBC world title. We knew that Golden Boy were raving about Canelo for a long time before I fought him. So we knew the potential, and we knew how good he possibly could be. But again, I was so confident.
He'd done 12 rounds with Matthew Hatton.
And I'm thinking, if he fights me the way he's just fought Matthew Hatton, brilliant. I love that. Just walking on. And he chased Matthew Hatton around the ring for 12 rounds. And Matthew did really, really well. Took some big shots. So we was out there 3 weeks before to acclimatise, to get used to it. I was super fit, probably the fittest I've ever been. It was my first world title at light middleweight. The other ones have been up at middleweight. It was my first world title at light middleweight. And I was so confident going into that fight until that first bell.
And then what happened?
He had everything. Everything a superstar needs to fight, to punch, to be accurate with his shots, his reflexes, his counter-punching. He had everything. I'm just glad I fought him then and not now.
Going into that fight, you said in 2 or 3 years he's going to be a superstar. I'm definitely getting him at the right time.
Yeah, I thought I was. I really thought I was. He just had an answer. I mean, I could adapt my style. I could fight, I could punch, I could, you know, counter punch, I could, you know, make people miss. But he had an answer for everything.
Had you wanted New York and Vegas and all that for your own career? Had you wanted to do that stuff?
Never really came into my head to do that.
In Mexico, what was it like, fight night atmosphere and crowd and
amazing.
That?
So we got picked up in these cars, big cars, and we're driving down this motorway, and then all of a sudden we turned off this motorway, and it looked like we were driving down someone's driveway. Horses on that side of the field, horses on that side. Then we drove up, and there was a big house there. I'm thinking, I'm not fighting in that house. And then we turned round this corner, the arena was on the richest man in the world's back garden. Imagine that. The arena, like Sheffield Arena, was on my back garden at home, the richest man in the world. It was a Mexican tycoon. We Googled him and everything. It was the richest man in 10 years ago, whenever it were. He was the number one richest man in the world. It was on his back garden.
What was the atmosphere like?
So for the 3 weeks, whenever I'd be running on the streets, there'd be people beeping and waving. I'd be signing autographs when we go for walks and things like that. We was on billboards, we was on bus stations, we was on in the newspaper, we was on TV. We got into the arena, went to the dressing room, settled in, put all my bags in, got everything. I said to Dave, should we go and look at the ring? She says, yeah, we'll walk out. So we walked down the corridor, walked into, it looked like this car park area, and the big curtain was there. And then, but the stage was there, so you walked down the stage to get to the ring. So we've opened the curtains, and we've walked on just on the edge, and everybody must have just seen me. All of a sudden, I got the biggest boo ever. 15,000 people, well, 14,980 something, because I took 20 over with me. But yeah, I got everybody booing me, hissing and whistling. And everything. That was the only time that people booed me. So I knew I was in for it that night.
We spoke after that fight, and you said everything you wanted to do to him, he did to you.
He had an answer for. He had an answer for. He just did. He just did everything good. I never expected him to like wait for me. Never expected him to counter punch me. Whenever he threw shots, he'd land, and he were in bunches. It weren't just a single shot or a single power shot. He'd chuck 4, 5, 6 shots. He probably only missed with one and land every other shot. He great at what he did. Great at what he did.
Adrian Broner was on the undercard.
He was on the undercard.
Did you meet him?
Yeah.
Impressions?
Just what it is today. I don't like him.
That Canelo fight was your first loss in 5 years.
Yeah.
You said you had no plans to retire.
No, I didn't. I knew I'd box a superstar. I knew I boxed a quality kid.
But did you know time was running out?
Yeah, I mean, I was 34 at the time.
You were Old Spice by
the way. I was Old Spice, yeah, I told you, I changed the name. So I was 34, so I knew I'd give my European title up to fight Canelo. So I knew there was a possibility of coming back and fighting for the European title again. After that fight, I boxed a tough kid in Kamitska. That was on Dave Caldwell's show at the Magna at Rotherham. And then I was number one to fight for the European title again against Robchenko. And I'd seen Robchenko box a couple of times. But in the Kamitska fight, in training, things weren't just how they should be. I was in sparring. And normally in my sparring sessions, my counter-punching would be spot on. I'd be making my opponent miss, countering him. Not going crazy, but just, I'd be my timing would be bang on. In the Kamitska, I was slightly out on things. I was slightly falling short on counter shots. But anyway, that fight went, and I won that. I won it comfortably. I dropped him in round 7 and everything, or anything like that. In the Robchenko fight, again, it was exactly the same. It wasn't
how it was, how it used to be.
And that was what I relied on. That was what I was good at, making my opponents miss, countering them with fast counters. And it just wasn't there. And that wasn't the main reason that I knew it wasn't there no more. But that's one of the reasons why I jacked in.
What was the main reason?
My kids. I was marking up a lot easier. In training sessions, I was going on with marks and bruises under my eyes, and when I did fight, I'd get a couple of cuts and things like that. But it would only happen when I was past my 30s. When I was younger, I used to spar rounds and rounds and rounds and not get hit. But when my kids got to a certain age and they could understand, they knew it was pain because they understood it, I didn't want to put them through that. No way. I wouldn't do it.
What was the hardest part of retirement to accept, or was it not?
No, because I knew the time was right. I knew I wasn't performing to the standard what I wanted to perform at.
When you retired, did you think it was, you said at the start, you thought it was mission accomplished. When you retired, did you think, I wish I'd been a world champion?
No. I don't think what if. I don't think I should have been a world champion. I beat Silky Jones, who was world champion.
But the fight,
it wasn't for the world title. If I'd have fought if they'd have arranged that fight and he would have still been champion, I'd have been world champion. It's what happened. It was what's been and gone. I should have been world champion. It just wasn't my time. But I don't look back and think, like, gutted about it. It's what it was. I was British, European, WBC, IBF, WBO, international champion, boxed for 4 world titles. I did everything possible apart from win a world title. But I'm comfortable with that. I really am. It don't bother me that I didn't win a world title.
What is your biggest achievement? Fight of the year with Jamie Moore, 2-time British champion, or winning the Lonsdale belt?
I think
belt
beating
outright?
Silke for my first British title, I think that was a big achievement. Beating Jamie Moore, because I was a massive underdog in that fight. Massive underdog. Everybody ripped me off in that fight. They all thought Jamie would was just going to walk through me. And I think, I can say it now, boxing the pound for pound best for the world title. I think they're the three big achievements in my boxing career, and meeting some fantastic people along the way.
In terms of Naz's career, by the way, how do you assess that? It was brilliant, but could it have been better?
Could have been better.
Should it have been?
Should have been better.
Does it frustrate you that what happened happened?
No, that's his career. But what I know about Naz, and what I've seen Naz do, and what Naz shoulda, coulda, woulda, he could have gone on and done so much more. He achieved greatness in his career. But because what I've seen of Naz and what I know of Naz, he could have done a lot more.
You said to me once, sparring in the Ingle Gym, you were doing 75% sparring to the body and only introduced head sparring 3 to 4 weeks before a fight.
Yeah.
And there were no walls in the gym.
Yeah.
Is that how you see things going these days? Is that how you think boxing should be?
Sparring is so dangerous and so hard, and too much sparring takes years off careers. It honestly does. We were speaking off camera earlier, and I've got guys what just come in here just to keep fit, just for fitness, and they turn around and said to me, oh, I'm all out of the bag now, I fancy jumping in and doing some sparring. I go, what do you want to spar for? Well, I just feel like I'm at that level now, I could do some rounds. And I say, are you mad? Why would you want to get punched in the face? At any level. As a professional fighter, sparring, training-wise, should be very minimal. Very minimal. I only allow my lads to spar 4 weeks out, 5 weeks out maximum, and they'll only spar twice a week. I hate my lads sparring consistent. I won't allow it because I know how dangerous it is. I once went to Freddie Roach's gym in LA, the wildcard gym, and I was there for 10 days, and their sparring days are Monday, Wednesday and Fridays, and they come from everywhere to spar in that gym. They've got 3 rings in that ring in that gym, and they have sparring, different coaches looking after the different rings. And I'm telling you, their sparring is like fights. There's no holding back. Everything is hard. Everything is tough. And they're all trying to make a statement. They're all trying to get a name out there. They're all trying to prove themselves in front of Freddie. They're all trying to, you know, it's a macho thing.
It's the culture.
It's the culture of what happens over there. And I think it's crazy. I really do. That's why the Ingle Gym, so many fighters go on to have long careers. Because the sparring's not, it's not sparring to face all the time. And it's not tough sparring. If sparring got out of hand in that gym, Brendan used to stop the sparring. And that was it. It was over. It wouldn't allow it to happen.
We talked about, obviously, you building your confidence through Brendan at the start and everything, but then we've also talked about the losses to Lee Blundell and to Jason, yeah. Otis, retirement and stuff. There were times in your career where you could have struggled with mental health. Have you? Have you ever been, have you ever struggled with those spells, or have you always been quite bulletproof about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, I think I've been, yeah, I think I've been a bit bulletproof over that, but I've had good people around me all the time. I've had friends around me for many, many years. We've got a massive, strong family support. My wife's got a big family. I've got a big family. I've always had good people around me. So I think we've all had tough times in our life, but some worse than others. But I'd like to think that I've been one that's been very positive and been very focused in what I want to do.
It's ironic. I think I always seem to gravitate up here for the anniversary of Brendan's death. We're speaking now on the anniversary of Brendan's death. How fortunate do you feel that you were to have come along when you did, so that you could have learned and spent so much time with Brendan?
The people around Brendan's at the time, the champions, the kids, what were involved in the gym. I am the person I am today because I've been a part of the Ingle gym. Who knows what if my mum hadn't have dragged me into Errol's jewellery shop at 6 years old, and Errol sending me down to the gym to speak to Brendan, and Brendan speaking to me in them Irish words, who knows what I'd have been doing today. Probably wouldn't have been that good.
Just got some quick fire questions from some of our subscribers. Glenn Wilson says, probably the dumbest question, but I've always wanted to ask Ryan, what's the significance of 26?
So 26 is my two daughters and my wife's birthday, all three of them born on the 26th. Just different months, because I wouldn't have been able to afford if they were born on the same months.
Robert Palmer asked the same question, but he said, why did you drop the Spice Boy nickname later on in your career?
I lost my hair.
Did you? Was that the reason?
No, I don't know. I think I just outgrew it. I think
it was a 90s thing, wasn't it?
It was a 90s thing, yeah.
Okay, Dan Medlicott says, I'm guessing Canelo is the best you faced, but was he better than you expected?
Yeah, definitely.
And if not, which fighter is the one that really caught you by surprise with a talent above what you expected?
No, I think Canelo's definitely was better than what I expected. He brought a different style to the ring that night, and we said all them years ago, 9, 10 years ago, whatever it is, that this kid is going to be a superstar, and look where he is today.
Lasted into the 12th round has aged really well, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Norman Barton, this has been quite a popular question, actually. I believe you have a role in developing a boxing video game. One of the features being creating your own fighter. Which attributes, in fact, before we get to that, are you involved in this game?
I am, yes.
What is it?
So there's a brand new boxing video game what's been developed for the last 2 years. And my role is to get fighters involved in it, to advise on the gameplay and the boxing in the game. And have you not seen it, Tris?
I've seen bits, yeah.
I mean, last night we announced Canelo in the game.
Was that through you or did you go through?
No. I've put out last night that there's going to be a rematch, but it's only in the game. It's only in the game. But no, I mean, the game has just, it's been touted now, not as just one of the best boxing games out, but one of the best sporting games.
When's it going to be out?
So it's going to be out later this year. It's going to be released on PC for early access, and then all other consoles later on in the year.
Are you in it? Are you?
I'm going to be in it. Yeah.
Are you going to have hair or no hair version?
Well, there's going to be two parts to that. You can create a character, and well, it's amazing what you can do with a character. But honestly, it's a great project I've been involved in over a year now, and I'm so excited because it's. People have just been crying out for a quality boxing game for years and years. The last one was 2011, I think, which is 10 years ago, Fight Night, and EA Sports.
Where's it being developed? Here in the UK?
So it's in Sheffield. Okay. The guys at Steel City Interactive are from Sheffield, which is ironic. I mean, I had the meeting over a year ago now, and we sat down with the guys and they told me their goals and what they want to achieve, and I was just head first involved in it.
And Norman says here, which attributes would you take from your favourite fighters to make the complete boxer? So let's start. I'll name some attributes. Chin.
Chris Eubanks.
Jab.
Jab. He's got a great jab. Anthony Joshua's got a great jab.
Right hand.
Right hand. Naz's right hand.
Footwork.
Naz.
Stamina.
Joe Calzaghe.
Power.
Mike Tyson.
Strength.
Mike Tyson.
Anything I've missed?
Good looks, mate.
Good looks. Don't know who you go for that.
Yeah.
No, it's been brilliant, Ryan. Thank you so much for
really
your time, mate.
It.
Really enjoyed really it. Enjoyed Top enjoyed stuff. Thanks
always.
For having us.
Thanks,
cheers, Chris. Mate.
Thank you.
That was brilliant from Ryan, who I thought was on excellent form, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I think we both did. Ryan's a cool cat who looks and sounds as he always did, and he's been involved with some huge names, been in some massive moments, and he's one of the few guys I admired as a youngster who I actually wound up covering in detail later on in his career. So that early career stuff and going back all over those days in the Ingle Gym was complete boxing fandom for me. A reminder, my recent book, Damage, or my new book, Damage, is now out on available from Amazon, Waterstones, and all good booksellers online. You can visit Boxing Life Stories on Facebook and Instagram. Look for Boxing Life Stories. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tris Dixon. And this interview with Ryan is up on our YouTube channel, so search Boxing Life Stories. And if you can, please subscribe to the channel. This podcast is brought to you by Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hanson Lee find you the best people, but Blaz and the guys help you retain them. You can discover more at hansonlee.com. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance. They are a leading provider of professional fire, asbestos and safety services to businesses nationwide. They offer one expert point of contact for all of your fire, health and safety compliance needs. And you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week.